And welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 107. Spotlight on Final Crisis. I am Chris Mosby.
I am Caleb Gerard.
And I am Murray Fox.
Yes, boys and girls, we are taking on one of the most dense and confusing pieces of comic book literature ever to be printed on paper or digital or anywhere else. I think they even made a novelization of it. I think it was 1,450 pages long. No, I'm just making that up. Anyway, here it is, Final Crisis. Something I've remembered that's kind of paralleling stuff that's going on now, coming up next with Villains Month, and we'll get into that soon. The tagline. Yeah,
let's what? Be fair. We're not going to do all of Final Crisis.
No, we're just going to do two issues this time. Just going to give for people that haven't heard of Final Crisis, here's a little snippet from.
Wait a minute. Hold on. What? Hold on, Chris.
Yes,
I'm going to interrupt anyhow, even if you say no.
I don't care.
Shouldn't Murray have to suffer through giving the synopsis?
Sure. I'm just going to give – he can do that. Yeah, that's fine.
Excellent.
Is that good? Okay. Little snippet from Wikipedia. Final Crisis is a crossover storyline that appeared in comic books published by DC Comics in 2008, primarily the 7-issue miniseries of the same name written by Grant Morrison. Originally, DC announced the project as being illustrated solely by J.G. Jones. Artists Carlos Pacheco and Marco Rudy and Doug Monkey later provided art for the series. It is directly follows DC Universe number 0 after the conclusion of the 51-issue countdown to Final Crisis. God, that was that one. Now that one was whew. Anyway, promotion. This is the part that I remembered and found very interesting. Promotion about the limited series describes its story as the day evil won. And yeah, we'll go from there. So, kind of rings true. Seems like got to thinking about that. Maybe Didio or Dodo or Doofus. He didn't get what he wanted out of the Final Crisis enough. It didn't work the way he wanted. So now he's trying again with Villains Month. That's just my opinion. Anyway. All right, off we go.
Alrighty.
Take over there,
okey dokey. Well, we're looking at the first two issues, and I kind of enjoyed rereading them, the first two anyway. I think I remember it getting confusing towards the end, but I liked these first two issues. It felt crisis-y, and it felt... I had forgotten about all the stuff that was going on in DC at that time. So as I was reading it, I was trying to picture in my head what else was going on in the DCU. Because some of the characters felt familiar. Some of the characters felt like I should know these characters, but I can't remember. But in the end, it didn't matter. Like, everything I needed for the first two issues, I think, was in the first two issues. Granted, I've got a lot of history with reading Jack Kirby's New Gods and stuff, so that plays in. But I don't know how the story reads if you don't know who those guys are. But I think it maybe works. I liked it. I like the first two issues. I like the cover dress that they give it. I like the big red stripes going vertically down the page with like a single image in the middle. I like how the colors get darker as the series goes on. I like how is it just that the colors get darker or do they start to break apart too? I can't remember.
Either way. Are you talking about like in later issues? Because in these early issues there, it seems pretty consistent.
Yeah, maybe. I guess we will find out. I know at least in my cover, cover two looks to be slightly darker than cover one. And I'm going to guess that cover three probably is a little bit darker, too. Mm. I had forgotten all about Countdown. Woohoo!
Yeah, I forgot about that. Glad I could bring it back to your memory.
Yeah. I'd forgotten that it was supposed to lead into Final Crisis, but I don't think it didn't seem to matter. Like, the first issue was pretty, pretty straightforward, and it felt to me like a, it felt like a crisis issue. Like it, it, if you're gonna do a crisis story in DC, you kind of need to play with all of the toys that DC has, and whereas Infinite Crisis kind of played with all of the toys that were currently at DC in the DC present, it kind of stayed firmly, I think, from what I remember, in present-day DC, which is a crisis story to a point. But this story, you start off with Anthro, the first cave boy, and you throw in Commandy, the first or the last boy on Earth, and you, you start throwing in concepts like the multiverse and the new gods and the Green Lantern Corps, and you're playing with all of the big toys in DC's toy box there. That was kind of, to me, that was cool.
Yeah, I could see that.
Uh-huh. Oh, and I agree. I go into this series, including, you know, with my emotional memory of reading the whole thing as a whole, you know, issues 1 through 7, and I read it month to month. This will be the first time I'll have read it in a more condensed format, meaning, you know, quickly. So, I'm trying very hard, Murray, incredibly hard, to separate my initial feelings for my first read through. From this read-through. I'm trying so hard. I really am, across my heart. And that said, I actually very, very much enjoyed how this series started. With the exception, and you alluded to it, with the exception of the fact that it is incredibly self-referential in terms of the DC universe. You, if you don't have that history like the three of us do,
right,
and maybe a lot of the people listening to this, and a lot of people that we know, it excludes you.
Yeah, I kind of think you need to have that DC background to really get the most out of the story. I mean, you can probably pick it up, but knowing all the little ins and outs of the DCU, I think makes it a stronger story, or lets you bring more to the story, maybe.
And I'm struck by the fact, you know, when we were talking with Scott, when he was on here a couple weeks ago, how his first exposure to the DC universe was Crisis on Infinite Earths. And my first reaction is, oh my god, I couldn't imagine giving that to someone as a first book. This, oh no, not even close. Not in a million gazillion years.
Yeah,
and I don't know that it was ever designed to be like a new reader friendly book. I don't think. I think it was designed to be a big meaty story, but I don't know that it was. I don't think they were thinking that we'll use this book as a gateway to, or that people will see it as a gateway to get into the DC. I mean, maybe, but I don't think that was their main goal with this.
Well, nothing Grant Morrison does is new reader friendly, except at the very, very, very beginning.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. I just had a little thought. He even plays with the little crisis things that pop up when you think crisis on the Infinite Earth. So you get like the red skies, and you get the storms in the sky throughout the first issue, maybe the first two issues. First issue, definitely. Like, there's totally the red sky there, and that's. I kind of like that. I like that.
And both started with Commandy. I mean, the pastiche. I looked up that word, but pastiche.
Oh, dude.
It's all over this.
Pastiche.
It's basically a homage. It's just another word for homage.
Okay. Well, all right then. I didn't know we were going to get all classy up in here.
Yeah, well, it's Friday and I'm dealing with Microsoft all.
Caleb's a little angsty today, so.
No, the red skies are all over. There's red lightning. There's more of a street level feel to this though than Crisis. Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Yeah, I'll give you that for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
With Dan Turpin, who again, if you don't know Superman mythos, he's just another cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that character was actually on the animated series, mm-hmm. Superman animated series, and he was actually killed by Darkseid.
Yep.
In that arc incarnation, which will make more sense as we get further on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he goes back to the Kirby New Gods days for sure.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of ties into the rest of this.
Mm-hmm.
And was he a Jimmy Olsen? I mean, not to get. I know we wanted to avoid minutia given the later overview, Murray. But was he a Jimmy Olsen character?
I don't think so. I think he was in New Gods.
I really don't know.
Yeah, I think Jimmy Olsen was more of what's that guy? The DNA purple dude with the horns. Double X.
Oh, okay.
And the Newsboy Legion was in there, and the Jimmy Olsen stuff was.
So that fourth world.
Yeah, it was less tied to the fourth world, and I think it kind of. It started off being tied to the fourth world and then became less tied. Maybe having only read half of it, so I don't know. But I think Turpin, if I'm remembering, was in with the New Gods. He was right in there with Orion and some of the Earthlings that were transported to Apocalypse.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. They're both Kirby creations for sure.
Yep.
All right. I didn't want to do my new show. I just again he is a incredibly main character in these first
issues. He's totally one of the point of view characters for the first two issues. We get his flip pad notes narrating different scenes. We get him following up on a mystery of missing teenagers, and that leads him directly into the Dark Side Club.
Yes. All right.
We actually get one of my favorite characters that came out of 52, which was the female question, the Renee Montez.
Oh yeah, I was really disappointed that they didn't keep that, because that was a great. I loved it, that what they did with that character.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of time building it up.
Yeah, and there was a good transition between old and new question, and.
Oh yeah, it was great. It was awesome. Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's interesting. Again, he also Grant Morrison, he goes out of his way. You know, at the time, I remember complaining that continuity meant nothing to him. But at least in these early issues, he was clearly on the same page with the rest of the DC universe continuity wise, with mm-hmm. where Hal Jordan and John Stewart were located, what they were doing with their lives, what the Guardians were up to, because obviously they're very important here. The villains, the rest of the Justice League, what they were doing, the Secret Society, that whole scene was incredibly cool. Mm-hmm. The Libra.
Wait a minute, did you say Secret Society?
They've been around forever.
Just saying.
There's lots of similarities between, well, not lots of similarities, but I mean, the way they've used the villains. Yeah, this miniseries is when, what if villains, what if evil won? Mm-hmm. And we see that kind of, that theme kind of trickle throughout the book in different ways. And one of those ways is with the Secret Society and Libra and giving the villains what they want and letting them see what life could be like if they had won. Mm-hmm. And now, current DC, we're getting a different type sort of Secret Society story with the villains apparently winning in a month or two, and we'll see what DC does with it this time around. But I mean, villains taking over. That's a well they've gone to a couple of times. So you can understand why they want to do it. And there's something cool about gathering all the villains together and having them plan in the background and make their little.
Well, they did it in the original Crisis too, but it didn't a bunch of 3D covers about it though. Oh, I'm sorry.
The Legion of Doom.
Yes.
Yes. Da, da,
da, da, da. I'm sorry.
And I want to point out, and I want, and this is not to be an apologist for current DC stuff with Geoff Johns and company, how they will always fall back on killing someone to give the good guys a motive.
Yeah, that it's funny that you mentioned that because I was gonna mention that to you, but go ahead.
No, what's your take? I mean, with this.
Well, yeah, it's and I think it's well, it some might say it's Johns's like go-to plot thing, but I think it's more Didio's than anybody. That whole let's kill off Nightwing, Infinite Crisis, but wait, we can't do that, and then now the hero that's supposed to get the most affected from this villain's month coming up is going to be Nightwing again. And he's not going to be killed, but he ain't going to be, you see these pictures with blood all over his costume and all this other stuff. And it just seems like it's a crutch they keep going back to. There's got to be, in my opinion, a better way to do things.
And Grant Morrison uses that crutch in this, and he kills off the Martian Manhunter in the,
this is true. This is
incredibly,
true.
Right in issue number one, and it becomes a motivator for the heroes as this miniseries progresses.
Mm-hmm.
I had forgotten completely that they killed off the Martian Manhunter in this.
Yeah,
story.
Until I looked at it this morning,
I had completely forgotten it. But I like the way that they. They did the funeral. It was somber. It was serious, and then they finish with, and we hope for a resurrection or a quick, because it just it kind of shows the impermanence of death in the DCU at this particular point.
Yeah, that line about the resurrection was I was very I want to say meta. I don't like using that term, but it was meta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. For sure, it was. But it makes sense, too, like in a world where every other hero has been killed off and returned, it makes sense that the characters themselves would finally start to pull that into their stories.
Yeah, when a street-level guy like Green Arrow can get resurrected, and a major powerhouse like Martian Manhunter should have a shot at it as well.
Yeah. That didn't last long at all.
No, but I think we got the sense that it wasn't supposed to last long. It was.
Yeah, well, and then of course they brought back the one death that I thought never would get undone, and a lot of people too, and I'm still people to this day don't agree with it, but we'll get to that.
Oh, yeah, the end of the second issue.
We don't want to, give it all away right ahead of time, so anyway.
And then, of course, the introduction, and just like at the end of Crisis number one, Crisis of Infinite Earths number one, we get the monitors, or not just monitor, but monitors, plural, which sort of show my feelings. I was a little irritated with that, but...
I thought that was silly too, but anyway.
It read better the second time around, Murray. Again, I'm trying to give it as much credit as I can, but I remember initially being...
And I'm looking at this, I'm wondering if I completely ignored all the other Final Crisis tie-ins and stuff, whether this would have read better too. Because the whole time you're trying to fit this in... Sorry, I don't know why I'm yawning all of a sudden.
Maybe. Like, I didn't ever end up reading a whole lot of the...
Oh, I read all of it.
Tie-ins. I read the Legion one, and I probably read Rogue's Revenge, but I don't think that...
Oh, Rogue's Revenge is awesome. But...
I read
The one with Spectre and Question was really good. The one when they were fighting
that was
Vandal Savage as Abel. Or Kane. He's using his Kane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when doing research for this, I found a little timeline thing on the Comics Alliance page. And they do... When you look at this, it's like he set this up all the way back in his Seven Soldiers stuff. Which I never read any of, but apparently he set it up all the way back then. So, back even in Infinite Crisis, which did he write very much of that? Apparently he had some involvement in it, but anyway.
Infinite Crisis? I know obviously he was in 52. Was he part of Infinite Crisis as well?
I don't know, but a lot of he set up a bunch of stuff in his Seven Soldiers stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, you like the Mr. Miracle one. This link shows a lot of that going on and kind of how it all ties together. And then, of course, the Death of the New Gods goes right into this.
But that was Jim Starlin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it was something they had him do, though. It's a good story, though. Anyway.
Is it just me, or did this end abruptly, this first issue?
Oh, yeah, it did. Absolutely.
Let's see. Where did the first issue end? Oh, yeah, let's I guess it is a little abrupt. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, let's get to it.
All right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
All right, so we open with a big scene in the past. We've got Anthro, the cave boy, hanging out, and Metron of the New Gods pops in and gives him the gift of fire. And I guess we're supposed to believe this is the first time the cave guys have ever had fire, maybe?
Yeah, I do believe he was, like, represented the first Cro-Magnon man. I think that's what his original deal was.
Yeah, so they're... The cave folks are battling it out, and then... Anthro shows up and throws fire around and saves his tribe.
Right, and the head of the Neanderthal tribe is supposed to be Vandal Savage before he gets changed.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yes.
It's kind of interesting, though, that instead of man being able to take credit for creating fire, Morrison gives it away to the New Gods. The New Gods give fire as a gift to mankind, and then mankind goes on from there, which is interesting. Interesting. And then we flash over to see Turpin, Detective Dan Turpin, and he's investigating the disappearance of six kids. And while he's investigating the disappearance, he comes across the body of Orion of the New Gods. He's been tossed in the trash. He's been beat up pretty badly, and he is dead.
Smoking.
He's dead, smoking. So instead of calling the cops, he calls the Green Lanterns, I think.
I think they just got the call. He was waiting for the cops, the rest of the cops, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell.
I did like at the bottom of the page, though, after Turpin is in confronting Orion, where they have the Black Racer hanging out in the background.
Yeah. Floating in the background there. Mm-hmm. And again, if you don't know anything about the Black Racer, that image is kind of lost on you. But for those people that know that the Black Racer is the avatar, I guess, the character that will bring the dead to their afterlife, then that scene takes on a little bit of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we get a couple of scenes of John Stewart Green Lantern being called out to investigate this murder. And
a code 1011.
Yes, a 1011, and he is completely unfamiliar with what a 1011 is. And eventually, the Guardians locate Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan comes down, and he lets that's John Stewart, know that a 10-11 is deicide, when a god's been murdered, a god's been killed. So they figure this is too big for the Green Lanterns, or the Guardians figure this is too big for the Green Lanterns. So they call on their Alpha Lantern unit, which is like a... Is this the first we've met of the Alpha Lanterns?
They were in the series a little, the original series a little bit, but they're like internal affairs to the Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
And was Green Lantern Corps going? Green Lantern Corps was a title at this point, right? I know Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Green Lanterns are big. They're the Guardians have got the planet quarantine, sort of. Nobody's getting in, nobody's getting out. They're gonna get to the bottom of this murder mystery. While that's going on, Detective Turpin has a little meeting with the Question, and she points him in the direction of the Dark Side Club.
Maybe I'm wrong about that. It says, yeah, Special Operations Alpha Lantern Unit is on the way, and it was Jonas's Special Operations. So maybe they haven't met them yet.
I wonder. It's early. Either way, they've either been only just introduced or they're being introduced here. And this
there are indications later in the story that these characters existed prior to being Alpha Lanterns. So,
yeah, that's right. I remember that now.
There's a little dialogue between I think it's Jordan and one of the female Green Alpha that we.
That's right, because she was one of their friends, and she let herself become one. I remember that.
Yeah.
Right. This is the other thing I kind of like about Final Crisis. He's, as much as Morrison is playing with all the toys in the DC toy box, he's making some new toys, too. Now, nobody ever really did anything with the toys that he was making afterwards, but it's neat to see him kind of throw out some of these ideas. So the idea that instead of just another Teen Titans, we've got this League of Titans, and it's filled with a variety of characters. You've got Empress from what used to be Young Justice. You've got Spark, I think, from... I think she was in Superboy and the Ravers.
Mm.
And you've got these two little speedsters that had only ever appeared on the Teen Titans Go cartoon.
That's right.
And now they've been pulled into the DC Universe proper. They become the League of Titans, but they are quickly taken out by Dr. Light and Mirror Master working together.
I love this line. The blindingly obvious Dr. Light Mirror Master team.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, that's cool. Like, you would think those are two characters that totally should be working together.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, Morrison comes up with incredibly memorable and repeatable lines, and that is one that stuck with me on this read through.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yes. Now, I was trying to put this in. This came way after Identity Crisis, so
yeah,
we knew that Dr. Light was much more than just the buffoon he'd been portrayed to be.
Yes.
Well, he says it right here. He says. They're asking for it in these outfits. Good God.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can look at it that way, yeah.
Oh, no, there's no other way to look at it. He's
well, except for the ones that they're picking up are guys, but still, you're right.
Guys can ask for it.
Well, true.
And there's a line later on where he is also called out for his rapiness.
Yes. Yuck. Yeah, so it's neat seeing those two. We get a scene where the villains of the DCU are having a protest. They're walking down the street protesting whatever it is. They're protesting vigilante brutality. And of course they're arrested because you get 30 supervillains in a small space. They're bound to be.
And you can see some of the heroes are sitting there. This is like the Metzler era, brief era of Justice League with Red Arrow and Black Lightning, and you got Red Tornado and Vixen over to the right, standing by Black Canary. So,
was this when McDuffie was writing Justice League? I wonder.
No. That's the team that Metzler put together.
Oh, this is the Maslow team. You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah. You just said that, and I just, in one ear and not the other. Sorry.
Yeah, it's quite all right. I'm used to that.
Yeah, yeah. Then we get a big scene of the villains, the secret society. And this current secret society is most of the big bads of DC at that time. And they're meeting with Libra, who's going to give them their heart's desires, which leads into John's murder.
Is that Talia at the table?
Yeah, I think that's Talia.
Yeah, it would be.
Dr. Savannah and Gorilla Grodd and Vandal Savage and the Ocean Master. Mm-hmm. And Lex Luthor.
Of course.
Oh, Lex. Nice.
Yeah, but he's not having anybody else take control of his little group. We get a brief scene of the Tattooed Man and Turpin talking about the Dark Side Club. And I think this scene really... Well, I guess it's to show the Tattooed Man is starting to change his ways. Up till now, he's been a villain. Now he's going to, over the course of the series...
You kind of skipped over something, dude.
You did. It's actually a pretty major part of the story.
Yeah, well, Libra shows up, and he's wanting to take over the Secret Society, so... He made a promise to the Human Flame, and lo and behold, shows Martian Manhunter being held down.
Yeah, yeah.
He puts a flaming spear right through his heart and kills him. So, okay, now you can continue.
I really wish they had shown him being captured, but that was done off camera. And
yeah, it was.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, and the little timeline thing shows that this Human Flame character was first seen. Kind of shows you how, like, people like, maybe he was captured in the Battle of Salvation Run, but I don't know. I'm trying to find, yes. Human Flame first made his appearance in the first series, Justice League of America, number 21.
So he's a Silver Ager.
Yes.
That was maybe his first and only appearance.
Yes, I'm thinking. Anyway, continue.
Let me see. We get Turpin going to the Dark Side Club, and he meets... I guess, well, it is Darkseid, but I think when I was reading it, I'm not sure that was clear to me. Oh, no, it must have been, because he's...
Oh, yeah, that's right. The people that were with him were Kalibak and Kanto. They basically made all the new, the old gods, or the dark, whatever you want to call them, made them all gangsters.
Yeah, like, by this point in the story, I think we're starting to piece together that, yes, the fourth world has been dismantled, destroyed. They've all been killed, but it looks like the characters have come back in different forms. So Darkseid is sort of the mobster boss of this nightclub, and the people that used to be his toadies remain his toadies. They just look different. They look different, and Darkseid has a little moment with Turpin, and I don't think we realize it at this point, but Darkseid talks about how the form that he's wearing right now is falling apart, decaying. It takes a lot of energy, you know, to be a human. So this starts to, I don't think we realize at this point that Turpin has been taken over by Darkseid or by...
Yeah, the annotated... the page, annotated page alludes to the fact when he touched Orion, that's when he was infected.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like way back at the beginning when he grabbed Orion?
Yeah, uh-huh. His hand was smoking after he touched him. Let's see, yeah. It says here, page 9, panel 1, the prevailing opinion seems to be that by touching Orion, Turpin has somehow inherited New God's powers and is likely to become the new Orion. Note that the sky behind Turpin is still mostly blue. Panel 2, Orion is obviously not dead and wakes up at Trevor's touch. His dialogue, they did not die. He is in you all. Presumably refers to the new gods that they're seemingly killed in the Death of the New Gods series, but he is likely to be Darkseid. That's when the Black Racer shows up.
Gotcha. Huh. Interesting.
See, there we go. I don't think there should be have to be annotations to understand what's going on.
Well, and that's what just everybody thinks, whether that's really what Morrison meant or not. Because when I first read it, it was like, whatever happened to him, he was hot, you know, red hot to the touch. And when he touched him, he burned his hand, and that's why it was. But considering what happens to him, that just makes just as much sense. As it says, that is the prevailing opinion, whether that's really what happened or not. But you can see that the gangster that's talking to Turpin, you know, he's sweating really bad, and you can see even as the panels go on, he's using a cane and having trouble. Looks like he's having trouble standing up. So, you know, just as easily could be that.
Yeah. Either way, that body is given out, and it's going to need a new host soon. I kind of like that more. Like, throughout the 70s or whenever, when they were doing the Fourth World saga, Darkseid was always looking for the anti-life equation and trying to figure out how he could find it, use it. And at this point, it looks like he has found it, he has used it, and
he taught it to the children.
He's given it to the children, so they are now wicked, evil little monsters. That's what anti-life does to you. Let me see. We get a little scene of the Justice League where they realize the new gods are sort of out there. The evil gods have maybe won, and they're all over the place, and they have to be on alert. We get to meet some of the Alpha Lanterns flying above Earth as they're doing their they're securing the crime scene. So we've got Boudica, who I think was probably a Green Lantern character.
She was. She was like a warrior type woman. She had actually lost her hand at one point.
Wow.
And by the way, the Alpha Lanterns, March 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this was right before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they pretty much turned them into cyborgs. They actually have carry their lantern around in the center of their chest. And at one point, they get suit. They have to do something, and I can't remember what it is, but they ended up getting another ring on the other hand. I don't know if it's in this one or later on in the Green Lantern series, but yeah, they're serious.
Right.
Yeah, and right about this time is when things start getting flaky, in my opinion. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, the Guardians, they always do that.
No, I'm talking about after this.
Oh, okie dokie. We get a scene of the monitors.
Yeah, that's where it goes weird.
To a point. We get to see they've got, like, all the multiple Earths in sort of like a great big chamber. Reading through it, you get the idea that one of the monitors has failed. His world has been destroyed. I guess each monitor is supposed to be monitoring one of the multiple Earths. And
52!
He's basically saying these are the DC Universe versions of the Watchers.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not only watching, but they're responsible as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're supposed to be caretaking or monitoring their
Nix Otan.
Yeah, we get to meet a couple of them, and they decide that the monitor that was responsible for whichever Earth was destroyed will be exiled. So he's sent to Earth. He's been wiped. His memories have been wiped. He has no memory of him being a monitor, and he is stuck on Earth. And the monitor lady that he left behind she's heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think that he failed on this is the. There's too many pages between that disillusion of that Watto character and the final page. that that's...
Yeah, it could be, because... Yeah, it might have been more effective to have had... to flip the final pages here, because the monitor is exiled to Earth, but it's not... It maybe isn't super clear that the character on the last page is the character who used to be a monitor.
I can say with no doubt in my mind that I did not realize it until just now, and I just read this yesterday, so...
There you go!
Interesting.
He wakes up, he's unsure what's going on, and he's...
I didn't have a problem with it, but that was just me, I guess.
You're smarter than me, so...
Oh, well, I don't go there. No, you don't have to say that! I do want to note one thing, though, real quick. When they show some of the other... Obviously, one of the monitors was in love with the one that went. And each one of the monitors looks a little bit different, which you find out later it wasn't always the case. But one of them is a female, and her headdress is very close to what you would see in probably post-crisis Kryptonian garb. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. Anyway, and you see one of the monitors is obviously glad this has happened, because he says, "My only obstacle is gone. We're on." I don't know who he's talking to, but anyway, continue.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's doing his stage whisper, his wicked stage whisper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right. The monitor's been compromised.
And there's another callback to the original Crisis on Infinite Earths with Anthro getting that flash of the future, just like he did in the... When he was fighting the something noses, the long noses, or whatever it was.
Yes, we get Commandy and Anthro meeting up, and Commandy needs a weapon, and Anthro has no clue what he's talking about. But I suppose we come back to that. I don't remember that part of the story. I guess I don't know. We'll see. We'll see whether it. As a resolution later on.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, as a first issue, I thought it was a great first issue. I liked it. I remember liking it at the time. I liked it now, rereading it.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it set things up. It felt crisis-y.
I would agree that it set things up. There were faults. But, I mean, I guess rereading Crisis on Infinite Earths, which I probably do every couple of years, I find faults every once in a while as well. So.
All right. Maybe. I haven't read that one in so long. I'm due for a reread for that one.
Yes, I have the Absolute Edition. I need to get that out. Mm. We should go through that. That would be fun.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Oh, that would be a good book.
All right. Next issue.
Throw it on our list. We open up in Japan, and we meet another new group that Morrison has created, the Super Young Things, I think is what they're called.
Super Young Team, actually.
Super Young Team, there you go. We meet the Super Young Team. They are the latest, greatest heroes in Japan, and they are slackers, and they're interested in partying, and they're interested in fame.
Let's see...
And they are being chastised by the old guard, the old Japanese guard.
Rising Sun.
Rising Sun, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the Global Guardians, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, was he?
He was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
It's funny how they always make Japanese heroes fire-based.
Yeah, why do they do that?
Laziness. E. Nelson Bridwell was not the most creative human being. He wrote some really damn good kid stories, but come on.
Yes. Friends. Yeah, Super Friends. Alrighty.
These characters are cool, though, and I don't know if these are all Morrison creations, but they could have been.
See, from
he loves that whole that whole culture that you want to be
and their names are, let's see, Shiny Happy Aquazon, well-spoken sonic lightning flash, shy, crazy Lolita canary, which is a little the little bitty wing creature, and then you have...
she was in Batman Incorporated a couple months ago.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Most excellent super bat and big atomic lantern boy. I believe we can all figure out who they're supposed to be, I believe.
Those are great names. They're awesome. So they're out clubbing. They're out clubbing, doing what young kids do. And Sonny Sumo walks into the bar, a big, tough wrestler type. He's challenged into a battle by...
Mega Yakuza!
Yes. Sonny's having none of it. Until Mega Yakuza, like, tries to blow him up. And then Sonny just reaches in, grabs his heart, sticks his heart in a lovely little bottle of water, and heads off into the bathroom to clean up. And he's all burned up and flamey, and he's sore. It's rough when you're pulling out a robot dude's heart.
Yeah.
I like the fanboy moment where they're like, you talk to him. No, you talk to him.
Yeah, I know. Go ask for his autograph. Say it's for your sister. It's not for you. And that little moment is interrupted when... Who comes in? Oh, it's Morrison's version of Mr. Miracle. Shiloh Norman comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is what, according to the timeline thing, that's what he called him in that Super Soldier 7 series about
The Seven Soldiers of Victory was... That was that character. So that character...
He was a apprentice of Scott Free, Shiloh Norman.
And Sonny Sumo, by the way, is a Forever People character.
I seem to remember that one.
Back from 1971.
Yes. And actually, the scene in this Final Crisis 2 is super reminiscent, I think, of his first appearances in the Forever People, because there's a big... like. I want to say it's almost the same. Someone comes in to challenge Sonny. Sonny beats the dude up. And then there's something with a mother box. I can't remember whether Sonny has one or someone gives one to Sonny. And in this issue...
Well, he says right there, the mother box with three X's led me to you. She's about the only thing left after the war.
Yeah,
so
in this case, yeah. This Mr. Miracle gives... Sonny access to the miracle box, and it cures Sonny. All his scrapes and bruises and burns have been removed, and Sonny is back to normal.
Okay. I was reading this thing. It's on the next page. You see that Nick Sutan? He wants the monitor of Earth 51 universe, which that universe... According, and he's got it in parentheses, which was destroyed twice in Countdown to Final Crisis.
Oh, that's not good enough.
Yeah, and working in a fast food burger joint would be a very, very bad punishment for just about anybody, I think.
Totally. In his spare time, he's reading the dictionary, going through every word.
Oh, that's right. His word. They took away his word.
Yeah, he's trying to find the magic word that's going to, like, unlock his brain, because he knows something's wrong, but he doesn't know what's wrong. All he knows is that something in his head isn't quite right, and he's, in his spare time, he's sketching out images, so we see him sketching out images of, like, a vampire Nazi Superman, maybe, or I'm sure.
Yeah, it looked like that thing from Dark Seed Red Sun.
Oh, yeah.
Where Dark Seed raised the crypt, you know, the Superman's rocket landed on Apocalypse instead of Earth.
Right.
So what it reminds me of, but I'm not sure if that's what it is or not.
Either way, well, it's a callback for sure to one of the multiverses.
See, and one of the sketches has got that Captain Manhattan lookalike, and if I'm not mistaken, that was one of the – in that Superman Beyond two-issue series, that was one of the Superman from another universe, so that's probably what this is looking at.
Yes.
This is Overman and Overgirl who he is drawing.
That's right. I can see Over G on one of the sketches, so that probably is from that Red Sun thing.
Thank you, annotation.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, very good.
We get a scene of Turpin. He's beating up a dude. He still wants to find out where the kids are, and he's just wailing on this dude, and he looks nasty and dark. And,
did you notice what you, the word that pops up in there in the second page of that, where the Mad Hatter has his face in the toilet?
Oh, it is the Mad Hatter. Look at that. The second word?
No, the second page, it's the... of him beating him up, and Mad Hatter's got his head in the toilet. It's the third panel down, the second world balloon, the last word, asshole.
What? I'm looking for.
Oh, I haven't got that far.
Do, do, do.
Yeah, it is. It does say that.
Where? What? Huh?
Comics aren't just for kids anymore. So, do you see the panel where Dan Turpin is standing over the Mad Hatter. Mad Hatter's got his face in the toilet. The toilet seat is sitting, is laying on the Mad Hatter's back in the upper left hand corner. It's got the notepad thing. It says what the, and then the blah 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 is wrong with me.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Oh,
kid friendly.
Cursing.
And you see his reflection, and he starts looking a little different.
That's true. That looks like he's getting the dark side eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
The dark side forehead. Poor guy.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Is that the first time the word asshole's used in a comic? Or one with
say no.
This didn't have the comics code on it, I'm sure. I don't really remember.
If memory serves, it was the... That was the panel that my first read through. I was like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Oh, I missed it.
Yeah, I don't remember that from before, but, you know, I don't remember a lot of this.
Well, there you go. It's a good reread. We go to Mars. We get Martian Manhunter's funeral. Then we get some scenes with the villains. And the villains are they split? I don't know. Lex doesn't want anything to do with Libra, but some of the rest are like, hey, this dude, he can deliver on what he's saying. So they're starting to, some of them are starting to buy what Libra is putting down.
Catch him when he's throwing.
That's right. That is right. And the scene kind of ends with Libra and the Human Flame talking, and the Human Flame's like, you put me back on the map. I owe you big time. You did me a solid. And Libra's like, well, let's talk then about what you owe me. Boom, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear the dramatic music swelling in the background. We get some scenes with the Green Lanterns studying, Green Lanterns and the Justice League studying autopsying Orion, and we get the information that he has been shot. There's a bullet in him, or it detonated inside him, but there's no wound. There's no entrance wound. There's no exit wound, but the bullet is still. He's been shot. He's got the internal injuries that would come from a bullet, but there's no evidence of the bullet being there, and we get a little bit of conflict between Green Lanterns and the Justice League, the Alpha Lanterns and the Justice League. The Alpha Lanterns are very, by the book, very business, very goal-oriented, and the Justice League are thinking that there's maybe a couple of options open to them. There's, you know, they can explore different things, but the Alpha Lanterns are total business. business.
This is where we get the line where it's clear that at least Jordan knows who they are, where he says Alpha Hunter Kraken is one of the best investigators in the Corps, so he knows who she is.
Yeah.
He does. And maybe she's shown up in previous Green Lantern stories. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because the Alpha Lantern's appearances are pretty changed from what they used to look like. So.
Yes. John and another Green Lantern are investigating the crime scene. I think they're looking for a bullet or they're looking for evidence.
Yeah, and it says, whatever it is, it's been buried in the concrete foundations for 15 years or more.
Uh-huh.
Which is just the start of one of the most confusing parts of this.
Opto 309V is that lantern, by the way.
Yes, it is.
He's got a cool look. I like his little horns. Mm-hmm. Or whatever those are.
Ears.
His ears. Yeah, they're floppy.
Yeah, see, okay, and they mentioned... Batman mentions impersonating Blockbuster. That was in Salvation Run.
Okay.
Remember that?
No.
I do not.
That was...
Oh, where they all got sent to the other planet, right? All the bad guys?
Yeah. That was it. He went with them as Blockbuster. And they found out later on.
Okay. Right. Right. I don't know that I ever finished that series.
I did. It was actually a lot better than a lot of people gave it credit for, but apparently it ties right into this. It mentions that on that timeline link I sent you.
Yeah, and, well.
That was part of the build-up for this.
Yeah, DC was trying to create a very cohesive universe. And you know what? This scene reads fine whether you know...
Yeah, it does.
...with background or not. Like, it's fine. All of a sudden we see... Is it the one Green Lantern turning on John Stewart?
Yeah.
He wanders off. Opto wanders off to go investigate a sound he's hearing.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then John is attacked by another green energy thing. He's kind of like spiked onto a... not killed, just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's crucified. I mean, for goodness sake, I mean, is it? He's got it through his hands. He's got it through his legs. He's crucified.
Yeah, and he says, "My God, it's you," which makes me wonder who it was.
Yes.
It's probably that Opto guy because they blame Jordan for it and the murder of the God.
No, Opto flew off to go play with that monkey.
Yeah, that's true.
Looks like a guardian.
Yes.
He's distracted like a shiny object.
So. Yeah, it's not an Alpha Lantern, no, because you can see, which the way it's drawn, it looks like the whoever it is doesn't have a head. I don't know if you see that. Look at that panel where the neck kind of just stops, and you can see the sky. So they tried a little bit too hard to keep us figuring out who it is.
Well, and someone pointed out, it says it's Hal Jordan's costume.
Ah, yes, that's right.
Yeah, you know what that is? I see what you're seeing, Chris. It's a hood. That thing is a hood, and then at the bottom of the panel, it's a shoulder, and his arm is zapping green stuff into Stewart.
That's right, because he's one of the few that has a costume like that. You're right.
He does look headless though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, until you realize that it's a hood and not a big, because it also kind of looks like a big shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
But that shoulder is just a shadowed hood.
It's an awkward panel. I'm gonna
a little bit. Yeah. The shadows, the shading doesn't really work to the.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really working there. Anyway, John Stewart breaks free, and whichever lantern he's coming up against grabs his hand, and they grunt and they groan I must have skipped a scene. I don't even remember the scene when I reread it. Then we get the atomic lanterns.
Alpha lanterns, yeah.
The Alpha lanterns. Yeah, they're blaming Hal Jordan. They say he's responsible for the murder of the new god and the attempted murder of his partner. And he's like, what? What are you talking about? And they kind of turn off his ring and prevent him from doing his Green Lantern thing. Superman and Batman are like, yeah, that's not what happened. It was not Hal Jordan. This is not Hal Jordan going crazy again. So something else is going on here. And while Batman comes to talk to one of the Alpha Lanterns, and he sees her doing something with Orion's body, and she's like, it's mostly energy anyway.
And then you start bad-mouthing Jordan about what he did with Parallax.
She's trying to lay, you know, like, lay out all the evidence that it is clearly Hal Jordan. And that's when this poor lantern is like, oh, you gotta help me. Something's eating my mind alive. She's eating my mind alive. So she's having, like, this internal struggle. Batman dukes it out with her. She gives him a pounding in the face. He goes down for a little bit, and she's boom-tuned away. She jumps into a Kirby boom tube, and she takes Batman with her.
Yep.
Into the boom tube with you, a new plaything for Granny, so we can see that the Alpha Lanterns have been corrupted. Corrupted by the new gods.
The dark side.
The dark side, that's right. Now is this... Yeah, that's Turpin, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Turpin having a discussion with...
Al Sharpton.
It looks like Al Sharpton. I think it'll be a new god.
Reverend Good, actually.
Oh, excuse me, Reverend Good, that's right, sorry.
Yes.
And he's Glorious Godfrey.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Their entrance to Command D. Oh, yeah, the Tunnel Turf and Good are about to enter the entrance to Command D, which was shown at the end of Battle for Bloodhaven, pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths. Command D was the location in the future that gave the last boy on Earth, Command D, his name. At the end of Countdown to Final Crisis, the Ravaged Earth 51 became the setting of for a version of Commandy's story. Interesting.
Yeah, so we see that Turpin finds the missing kids that he's been looking for, and they're imprisoned in Command D, and one of them looks like a kid who will eventually grow up to be Commandy.
Too subtle for me. I only got that actually from reading this the annotation. So.
Well, he kind of looked like Commandy to. But.
Yeah, and to me, I'm thinking, what is Commandy doing back in the regular DCU? Like, why is Commandy in this little prison?
But yeah, and if you look that big tube there, you can see the last letters Command D.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that about Commandy, so you know that was lost on me too. Boy, this is even thicker than I thought it was.
You need to know your DCU stuff.
Yeah, Commandy was a Jack Kirby thing too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a great run.
Whenever I think of Commandy, the person who was lending me comics at the time or giving me comics at the time was a big pot smoker, so I get memory of that smell.
I see. Yeah. Huh. That makes sense.
That might be a way to read them for sure.
Yeah, it might make more sense.
Oh no, they're very straightforward, but they're wild. Hmm. Yes, so Turpin has found the kids, and we find out that some of Darkseid's flunkies have been performing experiments. The Evil Factory is open for business, and the Evil Factory is a Kirby concept that goes back to, I want to say, the Jimmy Olsen books.
Oh, you see Batman all trussed up.
Yes, Batman is one of their prisoners. And we get the hints in this book, well, it's more than a hint, that something's wrong with Turpin. He finally says, there's someone in my head.
Well, his ear is bleeding.
His ear is bleeding.
Yeah.
he's realizing that things aren't working out. Batman tells him they're coming to get us all. You got to warn the Justice League, warn everyone, and then they put a big helmet on him and
which start zapping him full of juice. Yeah, that might not be the Batman though. But anyway, they released some pages explaining what happened. Those two things tried to make a clone of Batman, and each one of them went nuts because of all the pain that Batman went through. And he said, just kill all of them but one. I can use that. And that's what the one they're working on.
Wow.
I think.
Wow.
I could be wrong.
Really? I don't know that that's a... I mean, maybe, but it's... I don't think that's...
I was reading that in the...
The story?
The timeline thing.
It works better with it being Bruce Wayne's, right?
I think so. We get a scene at the Daily Planet. We get all the Daily Planet regulars, Clark and Lois and Jimmy and Perry.
But it's not Jimmy.
Oh, it's not Jimmy at this. Yeah. They're jibber jabbered about the.
Here. The whole Batman Rest in Peace thing takes place before Final Crisis, because they're showing in here. DC Universe number 0 takes place after Death of the New Gods, and it shows Batman 701 is where he's like analyzing. Says that after the events of Best Batman RMP, Bruce Wayne takes a few days to recover, during which Gotham starts to go nuts, and Libra makes his return appearance in the pages of Justice League of America. After his rest period, Batman is told that Ryan is dead again, and his detective skills are needed on the scene. So that goes directly into Final Crisis number 1. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Well.
Anyway, warn everyone.
Gotcha. Yeah, he's warning everyone. Yeah, and I think there's lots of little other, like, Final Crisis kind of plays out in a variety of stories. Like, it'll play out in Batman. Yeah. It plays out in a whole bunch of miniseries and stuff. But I don't know that you need to know all of that. Like, to me, whether this is Batman or a clone of Batman or it's Batman.
Yeah.
And that serves the story purpose. So, anyway, back to Daily Planet. Yes, we think it's Jimmy. Jimmy, of course, rushes off, and we see him transform into Clayface. He's planted a bomb in the Daily Planet, and it goes kabloomy.
You got to remember that earlier in the issue, Clayface was buying into what Libra was selling.
That's right.
Totally. And this is when Superman realizes that Lois has been hurt. After the building's been blown up, he finds Lois lying in the rubble.
Clark Kent outfit gets shredded that easily, and he's wearing a Superman outfit underneath. That's never happened before.
I don't remember that part.
He does that all the time.
Oh, that's right. That all happens in the Superman Beyond thing. He's sitting there using his heat vision, keeping her alive or something like that.
Well, in this issue, though, all we see is the explosion, and his Clark Kent clothes have been exploded away, leaving him in his Superman outfit.
Mm-hmm. A small nitpick. The panel above that, they misspell Sun Dollar.
Yes, they do.
Although, sure, that's not the way they meant to.
In all the other times, it's like it's supposed to be a play on Starbucks, and it's Sun Dollar.
Okay, that's fine. I believe you.
It's what it is. It's supposed to be a play on Starbucks.
Yeah.
And we finish off the book with a little two pages with Wally West Flash and Jay yes. Garrick Flash.
Yes, they kids. Are running. Wally West Flash.
Yes. Wait,
continue.
He's still here. This is his last big moment. They're running around looking at, running through Central City looking for some MacGuffin clue.
A cranky Jay Garrick, by the way.
Yes, he is a little cranky. They're looking for whatever. The big deal is that Oh, yeah. They're looking for some bullet. A bullet that's been fired backwards through time.
Which I have to admit is one of the coolest concepts.
It is kind of a neat one.
But he pulls it out of his butt here. I'm sorry. He pulls out that explanation.
Well, see...
right out of his Wally West butt.
No. Batman's the one that came up with it. In fact, he figures it out. Batman figures it out in Batman number 701, which actually comes out after the final crisis is completely over. So I think he had that planned. Because he was writing Batman and this.
No, he says right here. Wally West says right here, what if this is where the God Bullet breaks into time? And he gives his little explanation of how this bullet travels through time. He pulls it out of his butt.
Well, he says Batman came up with the idea. But you're right. It's kind of weird.
I don't like it, man.
So anyway.
Either way, we're lulled into this little sense that everything's going to be just typical stuff. Then the Mobius, that's one of the new gods, Mobius's chairs, I think.
It's Metron's.
Yeah, Metron's Mobius chair. There's a big boom tube, and out of the boom tube runs Barry Allen Flash, and he's being chased by the Black Racer, and the Flash is chasing that magical bullet that's going through time.
And then John F. Kennedy stepped in the way. I'm sorry.
Oh. Weird stuff.
Hello. Yes. You know what? I liked the second issue, too. I found...
Everybody's breaking up here.
It started to get a little confusing. But not overly much.
What? You can't hear us, Caleb?
Murray, hello?
Hello.
Oh, okay, there we go. Better. Okay, got it. Okay.
Sorry. All right, no, then.
I was just saying the second issue, we start to get a little bit of confusing stuff, but nothing that's overly... I mean, you get some crazy comic book science and backwards traveling bullets and things, but mm-hmm. for the most part, the story still is fairly straightforward, I think. I like the first two issues. I liked them.
I agree with Chris. This is where it starts to come off the rails for me. I'm sorry. This is a...
Oh, yeah. Definitely off the rails.
It's better than my memory of it, but the... Yeah, one of the things that I remember thinking at the time as I reread this one, yeah, that's something that bothered me before, is the abruptness of these endings. It's not traditional comic book cliffhanger endings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess. This one seems a little more traditional comic book. I mean, the reappearance of a big character.
No context. They don't. No. If you don't.
Yeah.
Again,
well,
this...
that's true. They don't set it up at all. It just comes out of nowhere. That's true.
They don't even say his name, do they?
No, and it could be Wally. I mean, look at the costumes here. I mean, there was.
Well, yeah. Wally's costume was only just the difference between Wally's and Barry's costume is the belt area was slant. It slants at a point in the front. And Barry's is straight all the way around. That's the
but
only
not
difference.
In this drawing.
Yeah, I was trying to see that, but that was what the. Yeah, no, you can kind of see where he's standing there with his hands on his hips. You can kind of see that the it goes down to the front a little bit.
And how would you be able to tell this from the pose of Barry Allen? He's leaning.
Yeah, they kind of hide it a lot, don't they?
Yeah, there's no. It's like. Well, great. Wally's at first glance, Wally's confronting himself. But
mm-hmm.
that's,
yeah.
Which would be cool enough in itself, but that's just.
I'm trying to remember. Did he at the end of the Lightning Saga? Did they? Is that when Barry Allen first showed up? Was when that lightning hit? Because that's when Wally came back. Or wait, did he get? I don't remember when Wally got exiled. That was the end of the Final Crisis. Maybe I'm thinking. Anyway, continue. Yeah.
There you go. That's it. That's all I got right now.
Okay. That's a lot, dude. My head's kind of hurting.
Ugh. Drink a little more. You'll be fine.
I don't know if I want to drink anymore tonight. I've had a migraine for the last 2 days. It's finally gone.
So Murray, thank you for convincing me to reread this.
I have to admit.
See, now you're going to read the rest of it. You'll be totally sucked in.
I would like to have a conversation about the rest of this. I don't know if I may need an enema to get, clear myself out and ready for this couple issues.
I tell you what, once we get done, I really do think we should go through this timeline that's on the Comic Alliance, because it's kind of interesting when everything is all out, what order, it possibly could be in, because some of this goes back all the way to Infinite Crisis, the setup for it.
Cool. Yeah, I always love when someone is able to go back and put all the pieces together. Alrighty. I have to book. I'm going to fall asleep.
Oh, you guys are wimps. Oh, wait a minute.
I'm fine. I took a nap. I'm much better.
I'm the one who put in the 12-hour day. So, Murray, I want to hear more. I want to hear about Fan Expo at some point, so save it. But
yeah, and Justice League Canada.
Yes. Do, 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 do.
One quick question, Mr. Gerard. Have you seen the redo of Lobo yet?
The what?
The redo of Lobo.
I've seen a couple of redos of him. He was in Stormwatch. So
no, this is another redo that was on DC Comics page as of today. I would wait till later, because you're probably going to be upset. Just warning you.
All right. Well, may the power of Affleck protect me. So.
Yes, that's a story for another day. Anyway, all right then. This is my part. As always, you can send an email at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com. Let us know what you think. Maybe give us some ideas for other crap that we can cover, Final Crisis Dance, maybe, or something similar to that. Or you can talk to us on our wonderful little Facebook page. I just love stirring up fanboy rage and all that wonderful things like that. Or you can on the actual episodes at talesfromlongbox.com/the show. And that's it for this week.